I'm Ashley Legasic.
And I'm Catherine DeClercq.
And we make up CTV's newest podcast, Life Unmasked.
We'll bring you everything you need to know about exactly how we're going to return to normal life post-pandemic.
New episodes come out every Thursday morning on iHeartRadio, and they're available on all streaming platforms later in the day.
We hope you'll tune in.
It's the subject students, teachers, and parents are all studying tonight. Ontario's blueprint for back to class. The door is set to reopen Monday. The government's goal, making sure they don't close again. Good evening. In-person school resumes Monday morning, and millions have been waiting to hear what awaits them when they arrive.
The education minister says there are strong protections in place, but not everyone thinks the province has done its homework. We begin our coverage with CTV's Queen's Park Bureau Chief, Colin DeMello. Colin.
So we're back in class, back in school. Across Ontario reopen on Monday. Rapid testing will be the key to keeping them open. The Ford government says each student will receive take-home rapid tests to confirm their COVID-19 status when they're symptomatic.
Staff and students will receive two tests each as an initial supply, with over 3.9 million rapid tests shipped to schools as we speak, ready for January 17th.
But once students are in school, parents will have limited information on what happens inside. The province confirmed today that it is changing focus. Instead of reporting COVID-19 cases, it will instead report the number of absences in a school. Schools are being told to monitor the number of student and staff absences. If that number reaches 30% for any reason, then the board will have to alert the public health unit. The public health unit will then have to send a letter to parents, reminding them of the COVID-19 measures in place.
30% most likely would represent increased activity in the community and would be a point at which we would want to acknowledge that, to review what's going on in the community and communicate that back to all parents.
Take, for example, Wexford Collegiate, which has a student population of 1,200. More than 350 students and staff would have to be absent before any action is taken.
What really struck me was it shouldn't be easier to find out if there's a lice outbreak in your kid's school than a COVID outbreak.
And the province says when that 30% threshold is met, schools wouldn't automatically close. Classrooms with large absences would instead be combined. And only when a majority of teachers are away would online learning return. The Ford government says ultimately parents are being, quote, empowered during this current wave.
We now have rapid antigen tests in the hands of parents to be able to test their children twice. That is going to help empower parents with greater certainty to know if they have the virus.
Critics argue parents are facing difficult choices and have a right to know what's happening in the classroom.
There's nothing empowering about this announcement today at all. If anything, I think it's going to cause a lot more questions for parents and uncertainty.
And today, the chief medical officer of health is facing new criticism over his comments on youth vaccinations. Just 47% of children 5 to 11 have one dose of the vaccine. Dr. Moore was asked whether it'll be made mandatory in order to attend school.
So it is a new vaccine, and as a result of that, we want a greater experience with it before we'd ever mandate it, and I don't think any jurisdiction in Canada has mandated the vaccine to date.
His comments triggered backlash, with some saying it plays into anti-vaxxer rhetoric, forcing Moore to release a statement saying the pediatric Pfizer vaccine for children 5 to 11 is safe, effective, and provides strong protections against COVID-19 and its variants. The chief medical officer of health saying he is strongly recommending that children between the ages of 5 and 11 get the vaccine to further protect themselves against this new variant. As well, the Ministry of Education is saying tonight that they are actually going to publish all of the absentee data on a daily basis on every single school. They say regardless of what percentage of teacher or student is absent from school, parents will be able to find out. But even though parents and students are returning to school on the 17th, this website from the Ministry of Education will only be ready on January 24th. Reporting live, I'm Colin DeMello. Sarita, over to you.
Thank you, Colin. Meanwhile, Ontario is seeing another jump in people hospitalized with COVID-19 today. The province is reporting reporting at least 3,448 people in hospital testing positive for the virus. That's an increase of more than 200 from yesterday. The number of people in intensive care is now 505. That's up from 477 on Tuesday. 9,783 more PCR tests have come back positive, but this is an underestimate of the true number of cases because of stricter eligibility criteria and a lack of testing resources. And more than 85,000 PCR tests remain under investigation as the province deals with a significant backlog.
And the province says 54% of those hospitalizations are primarily due to COVID-19. The remaining 46% were admitted for other reasons, but are now testing positive for the virus. In intensive care, 83% of patients are admitted primarily for COVID-19. The remaining 17% have tested positive, but are being treated for another issue.
Comparing some of that data to 1 week ago, again, there are at least 3,448 people with COVID-19 in Ontario hospitals today. On January 5th, that number was 2,081. There are 505 COVID-19 patients in Ontario ICUs today. A week ago, there were 288. And that's just a snapshot of where Ontario stands in its fight with the virus.
So with that in mind, how are families feeling ahead of next week? CTV's Scott Lightfoot is live with more. Scott.
Well, Nathan, many parents are eager to get their children back to school. Other parents are hesitant to do so, and learning today that they won't be notified if their child has a close contact or a classmate with COVID-19 isn't making that any easier for them.
When Ontario students return to school on Monday to restart in-class learning, their parents will stop learning about the state of COVID-19 in those schools.
Parents have the right to know so that they can make an informed decision whether they should send their kids or not.
The government says no longer will parents be informed about individual COVID-19 cases or outbreaks in their child's class. In fact, they won't be informed at all unless 30% of students in the entire school are absent.
I don't feel comfortable. Like, you should let your classes know there's a case in your class. That's what bothers me. I don't really like that at all.
Some parents left wondering why they'll be notified when a student in their child's class has head lice, but not COVID.
At the very least, I do think that families should have the knowledge. And then if they choose not to send their kids for those few days, I mean, right now, the way it is, I'm going to have to keep asking the kids, was anybody absent? Are there several kids absent in your class? And we shouldn't have to be detectives to try to keep our families healthy and safe.
Today's provincial announcement meant to reassure parents who may be nervous about sending their children back to school on Monday.
You know, we're all just looking for some clarity. We were told schools were safe, then we were told schools weren't safe. We were told we were closing schools to in-person learning for most kids to protect hospitals, to make sure hospitalizations are reducing. Now we're seeing that hospitalizations and ICU admissions are increasing, yet schools are opening.
But that hesitation remains for some.
Many families want to protect their community. We've come very much together in Ontario and Canada in this way, unlike several other countries. We want to protect our communities, and parents should be empowered to make the best decisions to do that for their family and for their school.
And as Colin mentioned, the Ministry of Education now says there will be a website where schools will post their rates of absenteeism. However, that absenteeism could be for any reason, and not just COVID-19. Pointing Live, I'm Scott Lightfoot. Nathan, back to you.
All right, thank you, Scott. More than 16,000 cases are considered resolved, raising that total to more than 763,000 over the course of the pandemic. 46 additional deaths are linked to the virus, meaning 10,445 lives have been lost to COVID-19 in Ontario.
CTV Sean Lethong is next, hearing from those in Toronto about their own plans for the return to in-person learning. Sean, it sounds like there could be some differences.
Certainly, Zarada, and one of the issues being now that the province isn't going to be notified or public health won't be notified until that 30% absentee threshold is met, a lot of the burden of communication falls to public health in the city and the school boards, and they are making their own plans.
With the province saying parents may not be notified of a COVID-19 outbreak at their children's school until the absenteeism rate hits 30%, the question becomes, will Toronto Public Health act sooner?
We have yet to really have an opportunity to work with our school board partners on implementing all the aspects of the plan as it's been presented to date.
In their announcement today, Minister of Education Stephen Lecce and Chief Medical Officer of Health Dr. Kieran Moore said that school principals don't have to notify public health until absenteeism reaches that 30% threshold, and that will not necessarily trigger a school closure. Toronto's Medical Officer of Health, Dr. Eileen Davila, says,
to my mind, the important part here is making sure that we're thinking about the overall health of our children, what makes the most sense for their mental health, for their development, and of course, for their education.
Both the Toronto District School Board and the Toronto Catholic District School Board say they were not made aware of the 30% mark before today's announcement.
That's what we're looking at right now, actually. How can we be as transparent as possible with the information that we receive, making sure that it's still accurate and still be able to provide some information to our parents, staff, and students?
But the Catholic Board saying they will be notifying parents well beforehand.
In the event that we are notified of a positive case, we are working towards notifying an impacted cohort.
The TCDSB also says they've been taking their own measures to go above provincial requirements.
We actually, in advance of the additional investment by the government for the HEPA filters, we already had made investments at our board to make sure every single classroom in our schools has a HEPA filter.
And they've begun receiving the non-fit tested N95 masks for teachers. Also, they're expecting 3-ply masks for students by the end of the week. But with Omicron cases continuing to spike and the absentee rate for frontline workers moving higher and higher, public health does admit that what happens next week is a bit unpredictable.
I wish I had a crystal ball. Unfortunately, I don't. But I certainly can commit to our schools and to our child care facilities throughout the city that Toronto Public Health is prepared to help them with reducing the impact of COVID-19 as much as we can.
And the test begins next Monday. So when it comes to the Toronto District School Board, they're currently in meetings and trying to figure out exactly how they wade through this, but they say they will have a communication to parents by the end of the week. Reporting live, I'm Sean Leithong. Nathan, I'll send it back to you.
All right, thank you, Sean. Looking at vaccinations across the province, 87.8% of eligible people age 5 and older have now received at least one dose of a COVID-19 vaccine. 82% of eligible people are deemed fully vaccinated. In Ontario, that's still considered two shots. And in total, more than 5 million people in this province have received a third dose.
And straight ahead, Quebec's quest to tax the unvaxxed, the province's strategy under scrutiny. And could it happen here in Ontario? The premier is weighing in. You'll hear his comments in just moments. Meanwhile, they are the cross-border vaccination rules that are being felt everywhere, from the highway to the grocery aisle.
You may have noticed higher prices and lower selection lately. And upcoming changes for people who ship some of those products could make things worse. CTV's Mike Walker is live with more. Mike.
Well, Nathan Zoraida, as of this weekend, truck drivers trying to cross the Canadian border must provide proof of vaccination. And the trucking industry is warning that will lead to a supply disruption with thousands of drivers being pulled off the road. After nearly 2 years of exemptions, truck drivers who cross the Canada-U.S. border will soon be faced with a vaccine mandate.
I think most of them are vaccinated. And those who aren't, well, they're risking to pay the price.
As a guest in your country, those are the rules for entry. It's either do it or stay home.
Starting Saturday, truckers will have to provide proof of vaccination in order to enter Canada. Unvaccinated Canadian truck drivers will be allowed to cross, but will have to isolate for 14 days.
Come Saturday, there will be a significant departure of those individuals.
The Canadian Trucking Alliance says even though 85% of truck drivers are vaccinated, the mandate will see up to 16,000 drivers pulled off the road, disrupting the supply chain.
We already don't have enough drivers. So what is happening is there's coming to be a prioritization within our membership towards their customers, and customers being more aggressive that can be more aggressive in acquiring truck transportation to go across the Canada-U.S. border. And others who cannot be as aggressive will find it more challenging moving their product.
Canada and the United States trade more than $600 billion a year. A majority is hauled on the road. Experts warn there could be supply issues from food to auto parts.
It's going to affect everything because even products that are assembled in Canada probably have some kind of an imported component that go into it. You know, ultimately, this is going to increase costs because organizations are going to have to spend more money on their transportation services.
The bulk of the $20 billion worth of food we buy from the U.S. is actually on wheels.
Food policy expert Sylvain Charlebois says any shipment disruptions coupled with an already strained labor shortage caused by COVID-19 could result in even higher prices and bare shelves at the grocery store.
Right now, Omicron is impacting the entire food industry from farm to store. Most food companies are seeing their staff being significantly reduced, 15 to 20%. The prices could be impacted by this mandate as well.
I noticed stuff comes in slower, but as far as them actually being low, not yet, but hopefully that doesn't happen for a while.
The government says it's working with stakeholders to minimize impacts on the labor force and supply chain.
We've been working very, very hard to ensure that supply chains continue to flow.
Insisting that vaccination is the most effective tool to protect workers and to keep the economy moving.
Now, the trucking industry was hoping that the deadline would be pushed farther back, but Ottawa isn't budging, given the rapid spread of the Omicron variant, saying it will continue to find solutions for any logistical challenges. Reporting live, I'm Mike Walker. Zoraida, back to you.
Thank you, Mike. Michelle Jobin is here with a look at our current conditions. Michelle, you could definitely feel the difference in the temperature today.
Much milder today, Zoraida, and I hope a lot of people got a chance to get outside and enjoy that. We did have a lot of cloud cover, and we will continue to do so through the overnight. But we're in a much milder air mass than we were earlier in the week, and then we will be later in the week. So keep that in mind. Mild enough right now to be seeing some rain through parts of southwestern Ontario. I certainly saw a few droplets on my car windshield as I was driving this afternoon, and we've also seen some flurries through the area. There's a good chance of seeing some flurries through the overnight period. Winds not too gusty, just out of the west at 8 kilometers an hour in the city of Toronto, so not a lot of wind chill to talk about, but we are feeling it a little bit. We're currently mostly around the zero mark through the region, feeling just a bit cooler at Pearson Airport. We're 1 degree, feeling like -2. Tonight, -3, feeling like -5 with some flurries. Back to you, Nathan.
All right. Thank you, Michelle. Some scary moments for drivers on the Don Valley Parkway late this morning. A viewer sent in video showing a mattress not fully secured to a moving pickup truck. It then goes flying off the vehicle into traffic. This happened in the northbound lanes approaching Eglinton. Police later removed the mattress from the road and found the pickup truck involved. No injuries or charges were reported.
A man has serious injuries after a car crashed into a church in the city's northwest. It happened near Caledonia Road and Bridgeland Avenue, just south of the 401. We're told the driver is in his 70s. A warning about some of the details in this next story. A Toronto police detective accused of making racist and sexual remarks at a crime scene in a case that many, especially in the Black community, are now watching closely.
As CTV's John Woodward reports, it's not the first time that same officer has been accused of misconduct that's been caught on video.
The crime scene last summer, this plaza in Etobicoke near Dixon Road and Islington Avenue. 22-year-old Jovan McNollys, who went by the stage name of Uvi U, lay dying, bleeding from gunshot wounds. And an investigating detective, Christopher Homanuk, is alleged to have made inappropriate comments. The remarks were caught on body cameras being reviewed for disclosure in the first-degree murder case, according to police discipline documents. Homanuk faces 2 counts of discreditable conduct, which say, while reviewing the footage, you were heard making inappropriate comments based on ancestry and or color or race, and inappropriate sexual comments, which constitutes misconduct, likely to bring discredit upon the reputation of the Toronto Police Service. It's not yet clear exactly what he said.
The Toronto Police Services can make grandiose claims of we want to build bridges with the Black community, we want to build bridges with the communities that we police. But when we continue to see these types of incidences.
Who's your buddy there, right?
I honestly don't know his name, man.
This wouldn't be the first time Homanuk has been accused of misconduct caught on cameras. This video was recorded in the back of a police cruiser in 2010. Homanuk was trying to get information on a suspect and threatened to taser one man's neck and another's genitals.
Who's your buddy there, right?
I swear to God.
Homanuk pleaded guilty to discreditable conduct. Then a criminal court judge left him with no criminal record, accepting medical evidence that his diabetes may have played a role. He hadn't eaten in some time and had low blood sugar. Critics say the new discipline charge is a sign that more work has to be done to root out certain attitudes among some in the Toronto police.
I think we again need to look at like institutional and systemic factors within policing that would enable an officer like this to feel comfortable making such remarks in front of colleagues.
We didn't hear back from Hominuk or his lawyer, and the TPS didn't offer a statement today, perhaps letting the investigation and charge against the officer illustrate their efforts to crack down. John Woodward, CTV News.
It seems everyone has an opinion. Quebec's announcement that it will tax unvaccinated adults is sparking debate across the country.
Will other provinces follow suit, and is the federal government considering a similar move? CTV's Annie Bergeron-Oliver reports.
Since Quebec threatened a tax for the unvaccinated, thousands have registered for a first dose. It's a move Quebec's health minister is applauding, calling the spike in bookings encouraging. But other provinces are condemning it.
I think if we go down that road, we are completely rubbishing the whole principle of universality in healthcare, which is why Alberta absolutely will not follow the decision of Quebec.
Saskatchewan hasn't looked at this. We have no intent to ultimately look at a vax tax.
Facing another uptick in ICU cases, Saskatchewan is extending its indoor mask mandate and proof of vaccination requirements for many businesses and events. When asked about additional measures to get the unvaccinated a shot, the Prime Minister did not criticize Quebec's approach, saying it's right for governments to find ways to incentivize vaccination.
This Quebec proposal is something that obviously everyone is paying attention to right now, but there are still many details to know. And the details will be important in how this works, how it balances the values and the rights that we all cherish as Canadians with the necessity of keeping people safe.
Although there is still little information about what this tax could look like, the Prime Minister says Quebec has promised to respect the key principle of the Canada Health Act, ensuring everyone has equal and barrier-free access to health care. Annie Bergeron-Oliver, CTV News, Ottawa.
Naturally, the question here in Ontario is whether we could follow Quebec's lead.
As CTV's Austin Delaney reports, those in charge are seeming to suggest the answer is no.
The province's top doctor says he is not contemplating following Quebec's lead in taxing the unvaccinated.
We have not made that recommendation to government ever throughout this pandemic. It's not one that we would bring forward. It does, in my mind, seem punitive.
We're taking a different approach. We aren't going down that road. We're going to take a different approach.
Along Hospital Road today, we asked Torontonians whether they support the idea.
I don't think it's fair to anyone.
I think it's pretty crazy. It's hard to believe that we've come to this, and it's sad that people haven't gotten vaccinated, but it's unfortunate that they're clogging up our health care.
I don't know if it should be taxation, but something should be done.
That's a good idea.
Very good idea.
They should better tax more.
More,
because
yes. Everybody should get
the vaccine and the booster vaccine.
A Marwa public opinion poll found 60% of Canadians support some kind of fine or health care surcharge for the unvaccinated. In Ontario, that number stands at 58%.
I know that there's a really significant need to get unvaccinated people vaccinated, but I think we have better ways to do this rather than fining people or taxing people, for lack of a better word.
A University of Toronto bioethicist calls the tax a political move.
I think it's very divisive. It's really cleaving people. It's likely going to radicalize a lot of people. You've got people in Quebec and every province. Some people have been willing to walk away on principle from high-income jobs. Is this really going to do it?
Mayor Tory wonders if it is fair.
I'm fine with incentives. I'm fine with saying to people you can't go to a sporting event or you can't go into a restaurant if you're not double vaccinated. But if you go down this other road, what do you do about people who smoke? And who then end up in hospital sick because they're smoking? What do you do about people who are drunk drivers? What do you do about people who have other kinds of, the health problems that are occasioned by their own behavior?
Ontario's chief medical officer of health says he has always been in favor of adults making decisions about their vaccinations and making vaccinations readily available. Austin Delaney, CTV News.
A lawsuit against Prince Andrew in the United States will be allowed to proceed. The Duke of York is accused of sexually abusing a woman 2 decades ago when she was 17. Virginia Giuffre also alleges she was coerced into sexual encounters with the prince by Jeffrey Epstein and his companion Ghislaine Maxwell. Today, a U.S. judge rejected an argument by Andrew's lawyers that the suit should be dismissed because of an old legal settlement Giuffre had with Epstein. Andrew has denied the allegations.
Boris Johnson still insists he thought it was a work event. But today, the prime minister apologized for a garden party at his official residence. It happened during the first wave, as the public was being told to limit gatherings to one other person.
I know the rage they feel with me and with the government I lead when they think that in Downing Street itself, the rules are not being properly followed by the people who make the rules.
Johnson now admits attending the Bring Your Own Booze event in May of 2020. Leaders of all the main opposition parties called for his resignation today. One of tennis's top stars is serving up another twist in his ongoing legal saga.
For the first time, Novak Djokovic is addressing questions surrounding him breaking COVID rules on multiple occasions. CTV's Raheem Ladani joins us now in studio with the latest. Raheem.
Well, Zoraida and Nathan, Novak Djokovic is defending his visit with dozens of kids while maskless last month, saying he didn't have the results of his PCR test. However, once it did come back positive, he still attended another event.
From the ground to the sky, a media frenzy surrounds Novak Djokovic practicing ahead of the Australian Open, while the top men's player tries to tie up his off-court loose ends. The 34-year-old is now admitting he attended this photo shoot in Serbia last month after knowingly testing positive for COVID-19, saying in an Instagram post, "I didn't want to let the journalists down. On reflection, this was an error of judgment."
It would be extremely helpful if you didn't cut public health off at the knee and were supportive of vaccinations, good science.
Djokovic, a vocal skeptic of the COVID-19 vaccine, was first detained when trying to enter Australia last week, a country where more than 90% of the adult population is double vaccinated. While a judge later ruled he could stay, the government's immigration minister is still considering sending him home.
Why they are afraid? If he cough on the court, if he's going to, you know, to get ill like 10,000 people, it's not true. I mean, it's silly.
What isn't a joking matter is the false immigration form he submitted, declaring he had not traveled in the 2 weeks before his flight to Australia. For that, Djokovic is blaming his agent, saying, "This was submitted by my support team on my behalf, and it was an administrative mistake in ticking the incorrect box." With the Australian Open set to begin next week, other players are trying to avoid weighing in on the drama.
I think there's still a few questions to be answered, and until that happens, tough to give a definitive opinion on everything.
As Djokovic's legal rally carries on.
Now, Australia's immigration minister can decide at any time to revoke Djokovic's visa again if he feels it's in the interest of public health and safety. But with the tournament draw taking place tomorrow, there isn't much time, as it would likely lead to another legal standoff. Reporting live, I'm Raheem Ladani. Zoraida, back to you.
Thank you, Raheem. Ahead tonight, radiologists are calling it a dire situation, the major backlog in medical imaging that could be costing lives.
And I'm Pat Foran. Coming up on Consumer Alert, whenever you're on the internet, it seems like companies are tracking your every move. One thing they really like to get their hands on is your email address. A way to protect your privacy is to use fake emails. It's easy to do and it's free. I can tell you how. That's just ahead.
Staying relatively mild overnight with a low of -3, a high of 1 degree tomorrow, but things are changing as we get into the next few days. Pausing here early on Saturday morning with a low of -20. It's going to feel much colder than that with the wind chill. We stay cold Friday right through Sunday. And then as we get into Monday, things are warmer, but there's a lot of snow on the way. We'll talk about that coming up in your 7-day forecast. Stay with us.
If you've ever searched for a product online, you know it doesn't take long before you start to see targeted ads showing up in your inbox.
Companies also want to get your personal email address to send you offers, but there are ways to try and protect your privacy. Pat Foran explains on Consumer Alert. Pat.
Thanks, Sarita and Nathan. If you've ever signed up for a service or tried to get a discount online, chances are you're asked for your email. If you give it out, you could get emails you don't want. Now there are free services that can give you a temporary email to keep you off spam mailing lists.
These days, many big tech companies are sharing details about almost everything you do on the internet.
The last thing that I Googled was a USPS tracking number.
That includes what you search, the websites you visit, and the people you connect with online. But how do they know who you are?
One of the main ways that they do it is tying your identity together using your email address.
If you want to limit that, you may want to try an alternative or fake email service.
There are a number of these tools, and they all work a little bit differently, but basically, they give you an alternative email that isn't tied to your real identity that you can plug in when you're signing up on a new website.
Maybe you've seen Sign In with Apple on some sites. It generates a random unique email address for Apple users. Then any emails from that site can be forwarded to your regular inbox without them ever knowing your real address. The upside, you get the emails you need without being tracked. The Firefox browser offers Firefox Relay, allowing users to create up to 5 fake email addresses for free or get unlimited ones for 99 cents a month.
And then there are a number of temporary email services that give you an email inbox that you can use, but it self-destructs after about 10 minutes.
For most temporary email services, you don't even have to create an account. 10-minute email, temp mail, minute inbox, and email on deck are popular services. When would something like this come in handy? Maybe you're asked for an email address to get an instant online discount and the added bonus to using any fake email address, less spam in your real inbox.
And a fake or temporary email can help reduce unwanted emails that you receive, but you should always use your real email address in any correspondence with your bank, your doctor, or if you're receiving concert tickets or boarding passes. On your side, I'm Pat Foran.
If you have a consumer story idea, email us at alert@ctv.ca.
Hard to believe just yesterday things were ice cold. Mm-hmm. Big difference today.
Yeah, definitely enjoying this short reprieve from the cold weather, Michelle.
Well, that's the point. Actually, it is a short reprieve. And if you don't like the colder weather, this is definitely a time to enjoy. We're staying mild through the overnight and into tomorrow, but a change is on the way tomorrow night. Weather is brought to you by Trane, the most reliable heating and cooling brand. It's hard to stop a Trane. So temperatures are part of the story in the next little while. And what we're looking at as well as we get later into the 7-day forecast is a little bit more of a precipitation story. But right now, let's check in with how things are in terms of our temperature and our wind chill. We're at 1 degree in the city of Toronto, feeling like -3. So wind chill is relatively minimal. Winds out of the west around, you know, up to 10 kilometers an hour right now. We reached a high of 2 degrees today. That is quite a bit above seasonal by about 4 or 5 degrees. So we're doing quite nicely. Overnight tonight, -3, feeling like -5. So we have the risk of seeing some flurries through the overnight and or some freezing drizzle in some areas outside the city. If you're in southwestern Ontario, you could also be seeing some rain as well. There's also the potential for fog to be developing. So I do urge you to take it slow on the roads and be aware of that potential because it could affect visibility and roads could be slick. Right now, in terms of what we're seeing, we've seen some flurries through the Toronto area, but definitely eyeing this. We've had rain changing over to some flurry activity in southwestern Ontario as we get a little bit later in the day. And we'll look at the potential of all of that redeveloping as we get later on. And I'll show you that in forecast radar in just a moment. We're in the warmer sector of the low right now. It's after the cold front goes through that things will change up considerably. We're waiting the arrival of a high pressure system that is going to give us a lot of sunshine as we get closer to the weekend, but much colder temperatures. And they are going to be a sight to see as we get into our 7-day forecast. So tomorrow we're looking at temperatures at the zero mark or just a bit above for the most part. Or if you're a little bit further to the west, to the east of the city and in the north, you'll be just a bit below zero. These are going to be reached a little bit earlier in the day. And then we're going to cool down. And you're really going to be able to see this happening in our forecast radar as the wind shifts. So as we get through the overnight tonight, looking at the potential of just some flurry activity. Lots of cloud cover again tomorrow, as we saw today. Little bit more activity as we get into late afternoon, early evening in terms of snowfall. So a quick burst of flurries, and then watch this. This is the wind shifting out of the north, and this is high pressure settling in, and skies are clearing out, and we are cooling down significantly as we get into tomorrow night. So 1 degree tomorrow, minus 11 overnight, and that's where we're going to stay as our high for Friday, then down to minus 20, plus wind chill overnight Friday into Saturday, a high of just minus 12 for Saturday, Sunday, a high of minus 5, and then accumulating snow as we warm up on Monday. All right. The Princess Margaret Home Lottery is here, featuring over 44,000 incredible prizes valued at over $23 million. They include the $8.3 million grand prize, a King City show home and Muskoka Lakefront Cottage, along with $500,000 of cash. The spectacular King City show home is custom built and designed by Green Park Group, with interior design by Jack Chelly. There's also the $1.5 million Georgian Bay grand prize, a Georgian Bay show home, and $100,000 cash. The Cobble Beach home is awarded fully furnished, professionally decorated by Tara Ballantyne, built by Reed's Heritage Homes. Or there's the $1.5 million Prince Edward County grand prize, a country home with $100,000 cash. It's professionally decorated and landscaped by Lakeshore Designs, built by Linwood Custom Homes. There's also the $1 million bonus prize, a downtown Toronto condo, a 2022 Lexus, and $100,000 cash. The condo is professionally decorated by Joel Bray, built by Pinnacle International. And the world-famous $2.1 million early bird prize, a Kawartha Lakefront Cottage plus $100,000 cash, fully furnished, professionally decorated by Lakeshore Designs, and built by Linwood Custom Homes. Plus exciting vehicles, name brand electronics, and so much more. You can buy your ticket online at princessmargaretlotto.com or by calling 1-866-631-1234. Every ticket helps fund innovative discoveries and new treatments at Princess Margaret Cancer Center, one of the top five cancer research centers in the world. That's very exciting news. Back to you, Nathan.
All right. Thank you, Michelle. Coming up, a creative collaboration with a familiar director to go with new music from her best-selling album. After the break, Adele drops her highly anticipated new video.
There was already a backlog before the pandemic. Many Canadians in need of medical imaging have been waiting a long time.
Tonight, radiologists say the scope of the problem is only getting bigger. CTV's Pauline Chan reports.
The Canadian Association of Radiologists is focusing on MRIs and CT scans, which are the backbone of many diagnoses.
Even before the pandemic, we had long backlogs. I mean, patients in Canada were waiting more than they should for imaging, which is considered life-saving in many instances. So the COVID pandemic has only exacerbated the current problem.
Dr. Anya Keeler is vice president of the association and a radiologist at Toronto General. She says wait times for imaging are recommended to be no longer than 30 days.
For a CT scan, patients have been waiting between 52 and 80 days for a CT scan and up to 89 days for an MRI.
And she says in some cases, such as cancer diagnoses, the prolonged waits could end up costing lives. She points to a recent directive from the Ontario government to reduce imaging by up to 30% as staff are redeployed to help in other areas such as COVID-related care.
We're at a crunch point. We are in a dire situation, and it's our request of the government to work with us and work with patients to make sure they get the imaging that they need.
Keeler says it's a combination of equipment and staff that are needed. And while health is a provincial jurisdiction, Keeler says the federal Liberals did promise $6 billion in the last election campaign to alleviate wait times.
The Canadian Association of Radiologists are really advocating to encourage the federal government to earmark some of that money specifically for CT and MRI wait times.
She says all parts of the country are seeing longer wait times than recommended, and a recent survey showed 30% of Canadian radiologists believe wait times will never return to pre-pandemic levels. Pauline Chan, CTV News.
Her family says she was filled with love and gratitude. The music world is mourning the loss of Ronnie Spector. Spector was the influential leader of the Ronettes, one of the premier acts of the girl group era. They had a number of hits in the 1960s, including Be My Baby, Baby I Love You, and Walking in the Rain. Spector passed away surrounded by family after a brief battle with cancer. She was 78.
After another unusual year at the box office, the nominations for the Screen Actors Guild Awards are now out.
At least that's my name, sweetie.
Our name, sweetie.
Ridley Scott's House of Gucci tied for the most nominations with nods in three categories, including Outstanding Performance by a Cast. Netflix's Power of the Dog also grabbed three noms. In a crowded field on the television side, boardroom drama Succession scored a leading five nominations, as did feel-good sports comedy Ted Lasso. And as award shows face questions about diversity and inclusion, the Screen Actors Guild is making history with two of its nominations today. Netflix's Squid Game has become the first non-English language series to earn a nomination for Outstanding Performance by an Ensemble in a TV Drama. Roy Kutsur and the ensemble of Coda are also in the running for film categories. The cast features several deaf actors, and they are the first disabled performers to be nominated in the 28-year history of the SAG Awards.
Turning Red is the next Pixar movie slated for release, but the decision to cancel a theatrical debut is reportedly receiving a mixed response from company staff.
My whole life I've been perfect little May-May, but maybe I like this new me.
The movie is set in Toronto. It tells the story of a 13-year-old girl who discovers one day she can transform into a red panda. Insider spoke with disappointed staff who hoped Turning Red could mark Pixar's return to movie theaters after pandemic disruptions. They still expressed support for Disney's decision to go digital only amid record spread of COVID-19. Turning Red begins streaming on March 11th.
Adele's out with a new music video for her song, Oh My God.
Oh my God, I can't believe it. All the people.
The singer-songwriter released a multi-layered music video directed by Sam Brown. Adele worked with him before on Rolling in the Deep music video. She thanked the crew for their hard work while calling the on-set experience a lot of fun. The new video comes ahead of Adele's Las Vegas residency, which starts next week.
Stars Tonight is brought to you by Last Man's Bad Boy. Who's better? Nobody.
We will continue to monitor current public health trends and do whatever it takes to keep your child in class and as safe as possible.
Updating our top stories, Ontario students will receive take-home rapid COVID-19 tests when they return to class on Monday. However, the province says it will no longer report the number of COVID-19 cases in schools and will instead report the number of students who are absent.
We're taking a different approach. We aren't going down that road. We're going to take a different approach. But I implore, I ask, I beg every single person that's not vaccinated, please protect yourself, protect your family.
The premier says Ontario will not be implementing a tax on unvaccinated people after Quebec's government outlined a measure to tax those who have yet to get their shot.
We do rely on that border very much to get the food we need over the winter months.
The Canadian Trucking Alliance says a vaccine mandate set to take effect Saturday could force 16,000 drivers off the road. They say the loss of that many drivers could have a major impact on food imports.
On the markets, the Canadian dollar was up 45 basis points to $79.96 U.S. American benchmark oil gained $1.42 a barrel to close at $82.64. And the TSX Composite Index gained 120 points to close at $21,395.
A new report from CBRE shows demand for downtown office space went up at the end of 2021, even as new COVID restrictions took effect. With 1.7 million square feet of office space newly occupied, that metric grew for the first time since the start of the pandemic. There were also notable increases in office tours and pre-leasing. CBRE says that's a sign businesses are making plans for after the current COVID wave. Here in Toronto, downtown office vacancy dropped to 9.7%, second only to Vancouver in all of North America.
Metrolinx is sharing an update on a key public transportation project in Peel Region. The agency says progress is continuing on the Here Ontario Light Rail Transit Line. Through 2021, crews have carried out work at Port Credit GO Station and the Mary Fix Creek to support construction of the new line this year. The line's rail yard is also nearing completion. The Here Ontario LRT will eventually span 18 kilometres through Mississauga and Brampton, with completion scheduled for 2024. Well, it's the back-to-school lesson plan families across the province are getting familiar with.
And it's also the focus of a discussion on CB24 tonight. We're joined by Chanel Call. Chanel, you'll be hearing from medical experts, teachers, and critics.
That's right. So Health Minister Christine Elliott, we heard from also, and Minister Stephen Lecce saying today that he wants to see this safe return to classrooms next week. And now we know that will include millions of pieces of PPE, those N95 masks, also HEPA air filters in every single classroom. But what we're not going to see is COVID-19 cases recorded and reported in schools. That has a lot of parents feeling like now they've got to choose between their kids' mental health or their kids' physical health. So what does the sign say? Is it safe for kids to go back to school? We'll put that question to our panel of medical experts coming up on CP24 tonight.
All right, thank you, Chanel. And CP24 tonight airs immediately following this newscast on CP24 from 7 to 9.
Pandemonium in Japan. Twin giant panda cubs made their public debut at a Tokyo zoo today. More than 500 lucky winners of a lottery got a first look at the new attractions. Their mother gave birth in June, the first time twin pandas were born at the zoo. It is temporarily closed because of the pandemic, but the lottery winners were given 1 minute each to view the new additions.
All right, one last look at the forecast, Michelle.
Well, Nathan, we're sitting at 1 degree right now, feeling just a little bit cooler with light winds out of the west. What we're looking at through the overnight is the potential for flurries, wet flurries, showers in some areas like we're seeing in southwestern Ontario. Watch out for fog developing overnight outside the city and the potential of freezing drizzle because we're at those marginal temperatures. Going down to -3 overnight, feeling like -5 tomorrow. Overcast, flurries, a high of just 1 degree, but that's pretty mild considering where we are headed. -11 overnight, staying at -11 for Friday with sunshine and very cold through the weekend, accumulating snow on Monday. And I'm full of good news tonight. Remember, tonight's Lotto 649 jackpot is estimated at $36 million, plus a guaranteed $1 million prize. Back to you, Zoraida.
Thank you, Michelle. And be sure to join us later tonight for CTV News at 11:30.
In the meantime, you can stay up to date by going to our website and watch breaking news all day long on CP24.
For Michelle Jobin and all of us here at CTV News, have a good night. We'll see you at 11:30.